Well, I don't know. What would you call getting warmer around the globe? No, liberal meteorology. Well, what do you know?
Not much. You.
Live from Fayetteville, Arkansas to Tempe, Arizona.
Oh.
It's Michael Feldman's...
I'm sorry. So good, I was surprised.
Oh, okay. It's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, and I'm Mike Arnold. In this hour of What Do You Know, we get out of the cyberspace cloud with Tube's author Andrew Bloom, all the news that isn't, and the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who beats the heat by taking a really hot shower and air drying in the yard, Michael Feldman.
Yep. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Madison. What a throng. Thank you, throng, for coming out in the heat. You throng, you. Oh, come on. You guys on something or what is that? Oh, they are. We're on something. Must be all that Wollersheim's you gave away last week there, right? They've been drinking it all week. So, the no such a thing as global warming people, they're like lobsters, in my opinion. Won't feel the heat till it's too late. So squirt a little lemon on them, they're done. Well, Wisconsin was never meant to be served at 104 degrees, though, I'll tell you that. Cow pies, hard as rocks. Good for throwing. Kind of hard to pass them, though, I would think. I don't really know. I got enough problems of my own. What can you say? It's 104 degrees, but it's a wet heat. You know? Feels like Fahrenheit 451, actually, in real temperature. It's like mercury in the off-season here now. If we do nothing about global warming, out of principle, you know, the next coolest planet is Mars. High of 70, low of minus 225. So just slightly north of Fairbanks kind of thing. Wisconsin now has an Arizona climate. The only difference is nobody asks for your papers. Yet. That could change any minute. You can't even head north anymore. You used to head north for relief. You can't head north because Highway 29 buckled, separating Wisconsin from up north. No way to get there now. And then, of course, everybody's worried, what if Canada melts? That's going to be a disaster. Okay. Now for all the news that isn't, find one more God particle and voila, little godlet particles. Or get a whole bunch and make something resembling Charlton Heston. You know, get enough God particles. Eventually, there'll be so many God particles, they'll say, oh, not another God blank particle. Funny thing is, I had a bunch of God particles in my sock drawer, and I just threw them out. I said, why am I collecting these? You know, who knew? But, you know, every particle thinks it's fundamental to the universe. That's just the way they are. They're like kids. Particles are like kids, you know. And remember, the last time physicists were so ecstatic was when they split the atom, so take that into account. How did that turn out? Next for physics, of course, the atheist particle. Then the T particle. That'd be better. In the non-particle, non-heat, non-news, Romney not only looking at a woman as vice president, he's thinking of sister VPs. Three or four of them share duties. I guess it's how it works. I'm not quite sure. Romney says the jobs report is a real kick in the gut, which is quite a flight of fancy for a guy who's never held a job. He has kicked a few guts, though, I think, along the way. I don't know. I had 80,000 new jobs. I feel pretty good about myself. You know, just me, though. I know Governor Walker would. Yep. Yes, sirree. Unemployment rate now, 8.2%. We'll go to 8.3% with Mr. Obama. But what a resume. What a resume he's going to have there. You know, unfortunately, he's not overqualified to ever work again, so that's a problem. pretty much how I feel. On the do I have health care or don't I front, I wouldn't talk up the pre-existing conditions just yet. They've waited this long, they can wait a little longer. Romney now says the mandate is broccoli. And he says, the hell with it. I guess this is the way they go. Groucho says you got to take up the tax before you can take up the carpet. Duck soup. What? Don't you watch old movies? Stay tuned. We'll let you know when it's safe to get sick. So tune in here. On the internet, denial of service attacks multiply. But hey, don't talk to me about denial of service. I've been married for 28 years. the University of Arizona develops a robot that walks with a human gait and then deports it when it cannot produce papers. The U.S. to hand defense of Afghanistan to the Taliban. That's a no-brainer. The court gives the green light to attacking priests in revenge in a recent case. But don't think you'll get off with a few Hail Marys in confession. So it's a little steeper than that is what I'm thinking. Samsung forced to sell new tablets from fireworks stands in the county. Congress passes balloon rate student loans. Your diploma will have the new rates on them when you get it. When the rates go up next year, time to think about loaning your student. Conservative PACs begin gobbling up one another in a billion-dollar game of Pac-Man. Big Florida tropical storm, Debbie does Daytona. Survey finds 30% of meat eaters would eat a vegetarian. Grain-fed. The rumored iMini pad for light days. PRI, Public Radio National, acquires Mexico in a surprising result in that election. Looks like we'll be replaced with Sábado Gigante. That means big Saturday.
It does.
We're small Saturday. Sexting among the elderly on slow rise. But they're getting there. James Bond at 90, shaking or stirred, just give it to me. And Anderson Cooper bites dog, that's news. And that's all the news that is, and thank you so much, and good night. Okay. And, it's the heat news. You know, there's a couple of things I couldn't stick in there, like local things, you know, because the heat is making people doing strange things, including the man who tried to smoke out squirrels in his yard, started a grass fire. McGonagall, well, that says enough right there. Trying to smoke out the ground squirrels living on his property sparked a grass fire on Wednesday. Fire began when the man lighted a fuse of a smoke bomb and set his own lawn on fire. The fire spread to several neighbors' properties, burned about 20 acres of grass and other vegetation. McGonagall's two fire stations responded. Eight other departments arrived later. A McGonagall police officer said the man will be fined for $177 for violating the burn ban and may be required to pay for the damage he caused the neighbors' landscaping. The man told officials he just wanted to get rid of the squirrels before he left town for the weekend. He now realizes he probably should have waited. So there's that. It's the heat. You know, he probably wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for this savage heat. Then the axe-wielding man evicts naked squatter from campsite, police say. This is right in town. Well, actually in Fitchburg, which is actually in town. But they don't think so, but they are. Read something like this. When a 50-year-old man returned to his base camp near Post Road in Fitchburg, found a naked man he did not know sleeping in one of his tents, on Wednesday, he grabbed an axe and marched the birthday suited intruder out, according to Madison police. According to a police news release, officers from Madison and Fitchburg responded before 5:30 a.m. Wednesday after calls reported seeing a naked man walking near a man with an axe. all right, well, that's enough of that. I'm just saying it's the heat is what I'm just saying. Andrew Blum has got a book out called Tubes, which is actually the search for the Internet. You know, you hear about the Internet, but, you know, where is it exactly? And that's the question. He actually pretty much got closest to finding where it actually is. It's called Tubes because it is actually Tubes, I think. We'll find out. He's on line with us now from Brooklyn. Site of the squirrel outage, right, Andrew?
Yep.
The big squirrel outage of what year was that?
That was the squirrel outage of 2009.
2009, and that was a squirrel nibbling through what?
My internet.
Your internet. See, now, what does that mean, then? Where is your internet?
Well, as the guy told me, it was my piece of the internet in the backyard behind my building in Brooklyn. And he sort of looked around, said, see a big jumble of cables here, but it must be that guy with the buck teeth. And he said, I think a squirrel is chewing on your internet.
Have you thought of a smoke bomb to get rid of those guys?
It could have worked. The internet probably would have gone with it.
Yeah. Now, and that brings up, you know, the first thing that occurs is that a lot of this stuff is archaic. The connections and the wires and the tubes and so forth really go back to the 1930s when they wired it up, you know, for phones, and or maybe goes back to telegraph days, some of these junctions.
Yeah, the patterns are always the same. You know, the highest traffic route today in the U.S. is from New York to Washington, and the first working telegraph route was from Washington to Baltimore. So it's the same lines.
Yeah, same lines. And you think a lot of it goes over landlines, or just these old-fashioned phone lines, right?
Yeah, now it's all, you know, at least at the middle of the network. The big pieces have been replaced. The copper's been pulled out, and fiber optic lines have been put in.
Okay, so that's an improvement then.
Yeah.
It's no longer the telegraph. But back in the days when AT&T actually was telephone and telegraph, that's pretty much gone?
Those old copper lines have been gone. And some of them, you know, they can't get rid of them, though. They're these buildings that are filled with old copper lines. And they say there's a fortune to be made in copper mining there.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that someone's found them already, probably. And so it turns out Ted Stevens said this famous thing, the internet is tubes. But he was right.
He was right.
Senator Stevens, the late. Yeah. Why was he right?
Well, we all laughed at him, you know, because the internet is a transcendent idea. It's this, you know, set of protocols that has changed our lives and causes revolutions and changes dating and grocery delivery and all these things. But we completely forgotten that it's also these very distinct, you know, physical lines between all of us. You know, it's actually a series of tubes. And you can call them conduits or pipes or whatever technical term you want, but I pretty much know a tube when I see one.
They are tubes. Are the tubes, are they big tubes, little tubes? I suppose all size tubes? And
all size tubes. Yeah. All size tubes.
Yeah. We're not talking conduit exactly. We're talking about fiber optic cables,
well,
or what are they exactly?
Well, often, so you'll have a, you know, on the side of the road, you'll have a thick cable, like about, about a garden hose, maybe even a little thicker than that. Mm-hmm. And inside of it, there might be 150 or 200 strands of fiber, you know, each as thick as a hair, you know, set up in these ribbons. But then in the buildings where the networks of the internet connect to each other, the actual places that are the kind of, the sort of, you know, distribution depots for the internet, there you've got these yellow fiber optic cables. And the whole, you know, the ceiling is filled with them. You can't even see the ceiling because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
And those are tubes filled with light.
Yeah. And but, you know, this kind of reminds me of Kafka, your quest here, you know. Like looking for the castle and you never get any closer to it, you know. Or trying to find the court where you're on trial and you can't find the court and you don't know where it's being held. It's in the internet sort of like that. It's hard to find out exactly where it truly is or even get to it.
The funny thing was that it turns out there are only about a dozen buildings in the world that are far more important than all the others.
Uh-huh.
And so those dozen were pretty easy to find and, in fact, pretty easy to get inside because they're busy places. You know, every network that connects, you know, to another network inside these buildings, they've all got a key and they all said, oh, come on over, I'll show you around.
Yeah.
But the Kafka moment for me was, you know, traveling halfway across the world, opening door after door after door to see the sort of the center of the internet, the router that, you know, is the, you know, biggest router in Germany, say this place in Frankfurt, and then getting to the same place in Amsterdam, and it was the same machine. You know, so I think the crown jewels were identical.
Yeah, was that the MLX-32?
That was the MLX-32. Yeah. That's the one.
What a beauty, though.
It is a beauty. Blinking lights, yellow cables.
It's a sweetheart, that machine. Hard to believe there's rodents inside powering the thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so that's that. But you know, like when you went to the Dalles in Oregon, right?
Yeah.
Would they actually let you? Now, this is where all this stuff is stored. I mean, which is really ballgame, isn't it? Who owns the information or who stores it?
Yeah.
You come right down to it. And that was the Google one, right, in Oregon?
That was the Google one. But there I didn't get inside.
Yeah. You got into the lunchroom, right?
They gave me a really nice tour of the parking lot. And then they showed me the Googler's organic garden. But it was wintertime, so it was just kind of a little patch of dirt.
All the perks they get at Google.
Yeah, all the perks. And then they took me to lunch, you know, delicious lunch, this great organic salmon and flank steak and these really good little peanut butter cups with like little sprinkles on top.
Yeah.
And then they said, please tell Andrew how much you like working for Google and how many people applied for your job. It was a strange moment. You know, this is the company that knows the most about us, but was among the dozens of places that I visited, the one that was least willing to tell me about what they did.
Yeah, and it's true. If you ever had any dealings with Google in general, like my Gmail was all messed up one time. I'd been hijacked, and some guy in Bulgaria was sending out calls for money to my, saying I was busted there and beaten up and send money to all my relatives. So I thought, you know, try to get a hold of Google, and they actually, you can't reach them.
Yeah.
You can send out a generic sort of email, and it goes somewhere, but it doesn't do any good. And you just got to do it yourself, basically, to get out. And someone told me that they don't even have phones at their desk at Google.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that.
The phone never rings.
When I said I was disappointed not to have gotten to see inside their data center when I'd seen inside of so many other buildings, and they said that, well, governors and senators have been disappointed too.
Well, isn't that a little bit scary? I mean, isn't that sort of, because when you think about it, I mean, this whole thing is about the information, right? And who has it and who stores it. It's not so much about transmitting it anymore. It's more about who keeps the results of it. And Google and Amazon and all these and Apple and all these people with their so-called clouds. And none of us really has access to it.
Yeah, and it's certainly not a cloud. I mean, that's the thing. It's these big factory-like buildings.
Yeah. I mean, did that disillusion you, perhaps? Or illusion you?
Well, the funny thing was Google was the one who was different from all the others.
Yeah. Okay.
My visit to Facebook, for example, and I suppose there's a joke about privacy to be made in here, but they were wide open. They said, oh, we'll show you every nook and cranny of our building. You know, we'll tell you all about it.
Yeah.
They published the plans. You know, it's a whole big thing.
Oh, okay.
But that also means to me that they take seriously that this place where they store the information is filled with important things. It's filled with our things. And we have some right to understand what's in there.
Yeah. Going back to the history of this whole thing, this originally was what the Internet Working Networking Network, or something like that—a bunch of bulletin boards at MIT or something. Is that how the internet started?
Well, the original sort of start, the kind of predecessor, was the ARPANET.
ARPANET,
which was the network of universities and some military agencies and things like that, and that was the kind of first network of computers. And then in 1984, that network connected to the other networks that had grown, and then you have a network of networks, which is the inter-network.
Inter-networking. I mean, inter-networking network. And then when did it actually pass on to the general population? That was in the late 80s?
Well, to that, we have to talk about Al Gore.
Yes, Al Gore invented it. We know that.
Right. It was his piece of legislation that sort of essentially privatized it, and in privatizing it, allowed all the sort of countries to then boom in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, let's not treat this as a government-owned network anymore. Let's have the government fund these first access points for all the other networks to connect to each other. And that piece of legislation, the Gore Bill, the National Supercomputing Act, 1994, that was what laid the groundwork for the boom of the late 90s.
Yeah. And wasn't it, a lot of this was like sort of like the rappers, you know, you had East Coast, West Coast, didn't you, going on there? There was a war, sort of a war going on in development.
You did. I hadn't thought of it that way. But that's indicative of the fact that the speed of light isn't quite fast enough. You know, you got to be on both sides of the country for all these machines to talk to each other properly.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of development and origination of various protocols and so forth. There was some stuff was going on in Palo Alto and some stuff was going on in Virginia or wherever, or in D.C.
Yeah, those have always been the two poles. And in fact, those are still the two most important places, amazingly, for the infrastructure itself.
Yeah. I mean, how did that come to be, that polarity?
Well, there's always, with these stories, if you ask this question about where is the internet, there's always kind of some fact of geography. You know, it's like it's there because of some history, whether the building in Lower Manhattan is kind of at the elbow of Lower Manhattan and the first way out of town, the Holland Tunnel. But then there's always some charismatic salesman. There's always somebody who said, you know, who convinced two networks to come, often by lying to each of them at the same time.
Yeah.
And then because those two networks connected to each other in a given place, everybody else came you know, piled on and connected to each other there as well.
Yeah. And there was, in D.C., wasn't it like a Sprint phone building or something?
There was a Sprint phone building for a little while.
Yeah.
And there was a place in the, you know, basement parking garage called May East all through the late 90s.
In a parking garage.
It was a cinder block enclosure in a parking garage in the middle of Tyson's Corner, Virginia.
Oh, that's interesting. Is that where the guy said if we took a chainsaw in here that we could really do something for Homeland Security or something?
That was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
That was in Milwaukee, okay. So yeah. Milwaukee is the center of the internet, which is nice. We're very close to Milwaukee.
I know.
Dangerously close. The Milwaukee is really, actually, what you're saying is the center of the internet, where it all began.
Right. The focus. The focus, and there is a building in there that could easily be a backdrop for Goonies, but it is the place where southeastern Wisconsin gets its internet from.
Yeah, and was it instrumental in the development stage? And because we have the two poles on either coast, was it kind of a central part of the country outpost for the internet development?
No, I've never heard anyone describe.
No. But the beer sure is good, hey? And what about them brewers?
And there's a sub shop in the lobby. That helps.
Yeah, sub shop in the lobby. Well, it's interesting, though. And there was something. Oh, and there's the map. The guy who does the maps, they're in Milwaukee, aren't they?
The maps are printed in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
At Kuban Nicholson, Printers of the Humongous.
Printers of the Humongous, is that what they call themselves?
That's what they call themselves.
Well, that's cool. And that's kind of interesting because what you're looking for is something tangible here that is actually the internet, the actual hardwiring, whatever, the machine of it. And they actually have the map, and you said as you were traveling around to all these different outposts, they all had this map up on the wall showing, you know, where they were on the map.
Yeah, that's how I knew I was on the internet. There were always a couple clues. There was always that same map. They always had it framed. There was always like a cardboard Cisco box, you know, tossed in the corner, you know, that, you know, some shipping box that hadn't been thrown out yet. And there was always a very specific smell.
And how would you describe that?
It's a little bit like burnt toast. A little bit sort of new car, burning plastic smell, and a lot of air conditioner. But anytime you walk into the internet, there's always the same smell.
Yeah, and guys with laptops with bumper stickers on them.
Guys with laptops and bumper stickers and hoodies sitting on some hard floor, usually sort of, you know, with this very upset look on their face. But if they're there sitting on the floor, inevitably something is broken.
Yeah. Now, I mean, and these guys are the high priests of this. Is it at all, it's probably not upsetting to you because you're a young feller, but... us older types thinking, you know, these are the guys now who are the new high priests of our culture, you know, and these guys, you know, we've all seen them. We used to laugh them off in high school, you know, when they still had slide rules in their pockets, and
yeah.
Pocket protectors and all that. Now it's kind of an amazing social development, I guess, if nothing else.
Well, the funny thing is that the real hotshots, all of them are 42.
Okay, now they are, but they weren't always.
Well, they all started at the same time.
Yeah, so yeah. The hot shots. But the new ones now are probably like 16, right? The new hot shots.
The new ones are 16, although the 42-year-olds keep the 16-year-olds in check. But this is kind of a subset. These aren't the network guys. These are the internet work guys. These are the
okay.
Kind of diplomats of IT guys.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Now this whole thing about the cloud. Now all I hear about is cloud, 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 cloud. Cloud is very much not a cloud.
No.
What is it then if it's not a cloud? I like to think of it as a cloud. Everyone likes to think of it as a cloud, you know, an Amazon cloud. It comes in, there's sunshine comes through, it blesses you with all things that Amazon can bestow and so forth.
Right. No, well, cloud basically means that you're exchanging the hard drive on your desk and the computer on your desk for a hard drive, a bigger hard drive and a bigger computer somewhere far away in some warehouse in Oregon or Illinois or North Carolina or someplace where power is cheap. And ideally, the air is cool, so you can save power by not having to air condition as much.
Yeah.
And the tax breaks are good, so that always helps.
Yeah. So, and where would these places be?
For example, Amazon has a big data center in Oregon.
Okay.
Another one in Virginia,
okay.
Which was hit by lightning last week.
Wow, that was...
Taking Netflix and Pinterest and Instagram and other cloud favorites down with it.
Yeah. Which brings, you know, and then that shows people's dependency on this. I mean, this is an amazing, like, let's say even in 10 years, a little longer than that maybe, but in the past 10 years, the dependency that people, this is like, you know, these are like heart-lung machines to a lot of the population now. So if it goes down, you know, how do they breathe?
Right. And they break. You know, they don't break often, but the squirrels get to them. The power goes out. You know, the guys in the hoodies screw up somehow. And then we all get very upset about it. Yeah. You know, my premise is we should at least know where it is. You know, bringing it upset about it, we should know what color the walls are.
Yeah. But on the other hand, we have absolutely no input into any of it, right? I mean, you just think the internet was really a democratic by nature institution originally. You know, no advertising. Anybody could put anything out there or access anything that was out there. No fee. And that's certainly not what it is now.
Well, now it's entirely privately owned networks.
Yeah. You know,
there is no public internet.
Yeah.
But the flip side is, you know, yes, we have no input into it, but we don't really demand any.
Oh.
And we could. We could. You know, I mean, I was in Portland, Oregon a few weeks ago. And in Portland, they have artisanal everything, right? They told me about an artisanal pencil sharpener. And when you ask a group of people in Portland where they get their internet from, they all say, Comcast. You know, where else would we get it?
Yeah.
But in fact, you know, we could all have sort of artisanal internet. You know, we could demand that the ISPs, you know, both offer better service and aren't spying on us and protect our privacy in different ways. Rather than just saying, Comcast, I guess that's it for our only choice for the primary source of all information.
Mm-hmm.
And they were signing a petition. They were all ready to go. The crowd was piled up.
Nothing happened with that so far. And then, of course, Congress sort of regulates it. Do they or don't they? How is this all regulated? I know Ted Stevens is not there anymore to regulate it.
Ted Stevens is not there anymore, yeah. No. I'm sort of sorry he's not here to enjoy his...
the fruits of his labor.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. I did hear from his son-in-law,
mm-hmm.
Who told me that their home Wi-Fi network is named Nugget Tubes. Tubes in Ted's honor and Nugget named after their cockapoo.
And did you actually meet Danny from Danny's hard drive?
No. Yeah, but I tracked her down. I spent a good 2 days trying to find... Danny, the late 1990s internet porn star.
The porn star, yeah. Which is really what the internet turns out to be all about anyhow. It's an amazing way of distributing pornography.
The network engineer expression is that the internet runs on porn.
Yeah.
That is the source of all technological advancement.
That's the engine. And everything else is just a byproduct of the amazingly successful porn industry. In doing all this and going to all these places and exploring, you know, really making it all tangible, what surprised you the most in what you discovered?
I was really surprised by how little of it there was and how few people were kind of in charge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, it's these dozen buildings in the world that are by far the most important places where the networks connect to each other physically. You know, the big refrigerator-sized router of one network connected to the big refrigerator-sized router of another network. You know, Comcast to a Facebook, a Google to a Time Warner, whatever it is. And then about 300 people who seem to be calling most of the shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they meet three times a year at their conference. You know, we go to conferences to network. They actually go to conferences to network. You know, they take that very literally.
They physically
decide to connect their networks to each other.
They're physically in the same presence as one another. That must be quite a shock for some of them.
That's the thing, is they all need to develop these really trusting relationships in order to know that if they connect one network to another, the other person won't screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
They say the other person has to be clueful, which is the opposite of clueless.
I never liked these guys in high school, and I don't know if I like them now. But that is kind of interesting. They're
I hope
smart.
Your internet still works when you get home this afternoon.
Yeah, yeah, my internet could be out, and that'll be it. I have a denial of service from someone other than my wife. And then we're always told that the internet 2.0 or whatever the next internet is supposed to be is on the horizon where the heck is it?
I Milwaukee maybe. I don't know. I mean, the evolution's going to be slow. I think that we won't rest until we have enough bandwidth at home to do enough, you know, that our connection is fast enough to do, I think, two-way video conferencing on a really big screen.
Yeah.
You know, my 3-year-old cool. thinks that telephones are things you look at. And I think we're not going to rest until we have that sort of that big Jetsons video wall in our living rooms.
Yeah, yeah.
Two-way.
Yeah. But is there such a thing? I saw some people were writing about it saying it's on the horizon now. It's being developed somewhere, MIT again, or one of those places. And it's all the transmission is quite different. and all the networking is quite different. It surpasses all these current systems that are really kind of low level in a way. Is it true or not? Is it out there or am I dreaming? Is it science fiction?
It's somewhere in between. Yeah. It's a theoretical project. It will eventually sort of filter to the rest of us,
yeah.
But it's not like anyone's going to flip a switch and suddenly there's going to be a new internet.
Okay. All right. Well, at least I won't wait for it then.
Don't hold your breath. Yeah.
I was going to wait to buying my router until they got it.
Right.
Well, it's very cool. Andrew Blum, Tubes, A Journey to the Center of the Internet, and it's on, what press is that on there?
It's on Echo.
On Echo Press. So thank you for taking the time. Very interesting stuff.
Thank you.
Andrew Blum, Brooklyn, New York. He's been to the internet, and it is good. All right, there. Tubes. Tubes, that is in there. I'm at that age where all this stuff still boggles my mind, I must admit. I'm kind of almost embarrassed to be as involved in it as I am now, because I do all this stuff, you know. I'm Twitter is my thing now.
You're pretty computer savvy, aren't you?
I started doing that for absolutely no reason, just because I kept breaking them down. So I thought, well, it'd be fun to make one, and then if I break it, it's just something I made. But then I got into it and all this stuff. But the whole, I still don't have the mentality.
Yeah.
That you see in someone considerably younger than you or I.
Yeah.
They grow up with
take
this
much,
stuff,
these
But I also think like the cell phone thing is like now bigger than the internet.
Yeah.
These kids grew up with their cell phones.
Well, it's sort of the same thing, but it's just...
It is. They merge at a certain point, but, that's something I can't get used to. Cell phone is lifeline thing. I can see it if I fall down and can't get up. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's why you got that thing around your neck, though, right there.
Yeah. You already got that, so there's no... And it got the clapper,
Right.
But,
you can probably do that with your phone, though, these days. You don't even need to clap.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Okay. Tim Rodenberg, I definitely want to talk to you because he's the sheriff of Claremont County in Batavia, Ohio, near Cincinnati. And I figure if I'm ever driving around there, I know Tim Rodenberg, what he stopped me for. Very close personal. Where is Tim? Close personal friend. And he's dressed for the Tour de France and everything, and I mentioned that earlier. By the way, that's going on today, and if you're at the Tour de France, will you get off the street already? What's with those people standing in the street?
Who knows?
Yeah, they have to avoid them, when they go through a town or something like that. Get out of the street, people! Okay, I had to get that on my chest. How are you?
Nice to meet you, sir.
Nice to meet you.
You want to stand up so people can see I got a real sheriff here and everything? Because you look like a sheriff.
Thank you.
You're out of uniform, no?
I'm married to a judge, too.
Married to a judge?
Yes, sir.
Did you meet in that under those circumstances?
No. Fortunately, she's a divorce judge. We met in law school.
Oh, we met in law school.
Yeah, or actually before, undergrad.
Yeah, so you could have been a divorce attorney yourself.
I was for a while. I was an attorney before I became sheriff and the prosecutor.
Oh, yeah. Did you do divorces? Not divorces.
I did that. That drove me out of the business, though.
Yeah.
Wasn't much fun.
Easier to be a sheriff or you just...
Yes. We break up the fights, and then she resolves them in court.
Yeah. A lot of them are domestic, too, aren't they?
Oh, they are. Yeah, unfortunately, we see a lot of that today.
So now, you're the sheriff, though.
Yes, of Claremont County. We're just east of Cincinnati. About
so, 20. What what does the sheriff actually do? Because you got deputies, right, to do everything, right?
Actually, I don't do much. You're right.
Yeah. Because I might be interested in doing that sometime.
Well, the troops do the work. I have about 200 people working for me.
But where are you physically when they're out there? Prowling in their prowlers.
Unfortunately, I'm mainly dealing with the administration and bureaucracy, politics.
So you're sitting in a nice air-conditioned office somewhere near Batavia.
Well, most of the time, yes.
Okay. Not a bad job.
No.
Did you have to work your way up? Did you start off as a...
Actually not. I was an assistant prosecutor for 10 years.
Yeah.
And the sheriff retired, and I ran for election. It's been about 15 years ago, and I've been reelected about 4 times with no one running against me, so that's...
Pretty good. There's a new sheriff in town, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Rodenberg. Well, thank you for coming here, Tim. What brings you to town?
Visiting our son and his girlfriend,
okay.
Nick and Julia. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, there they are. They don't seem to know that they're here.
Thank you.
Okay, is that working out pretty good?
Oh, it is. It's a nice visit. It's a nice town. A little warm here. It's 15 degrees cooler in Cincinnati, which is 8 hours south of here.
Yeah. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
It is.
Well, thanks for being here. Nice to meet you.
Sheriff? Nice to meet you. Thanks.
Mike Feldman, do you have a card or something in case I... Because, you know, once in a while we go to Cincinnati around here. If I get stopped, I want to just show them your card.
Well, I've got it.
Instead of doing the 50 out of the wallet thing, which gets old, you know. Oh, what is that sticking out of your wallet? Oh, that's just a 50. But if I have your card, it'll go a lot further. I don't want your ARP card.
See, I've got it.
Yeah, what do you got a lot? Oh, give me the ARP card. That'd be good.
I've written get out of jail free on the back.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you very much, Tim. Sheriff?
Thank you.
I meant to say sheriff. I didn't mean to say... I am keeping this. This is a real sheriff's card. I have a card from a sheriff. If I ever get in trouble, show him it's from the sheriff. Yeah, cool, huh?
You like that?
Yeah, cool. Oh, sorry, okay, I don't mean to... I'm just saying I'm kind of excited about it. Now I've got to get one from every city that I happen to pass through, and I'll be in business. Tracy Coombs rhymes with rooms. Are you like Mitt considering a female running mate? No, I've considered running after a few females for mates, but never as a running mate. They never run with me, so they wouldn't be running mates. So that's Tracy Coombs rhymes with rooms. Where's Tracy Coombs? Rhymes with rooms. Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Nice to see you. You think of running?
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Would you like to run in a Feldman Coombs ticket?
No.
No? Okay. No. I guess then I won't come over there because you don't seem interested at all. Thank you for asking, though. Maggie Catterbeck. No, it's Catterbeck. Catterbeck. Okay. I'll give it to you. She says works for a search engine optimization. You do? Where are you? Oh, well, there you are. Hi. I had a search for you. If Abraham Lincoln killed vampires, what did Teddy Roosevelt kill? Probably his horse. You know, he put on quite a bit of weight and. Have you seen that movie? Or what, is that a movie?
I guess so. Hi. No, I haven't seen the movie, but I'm really curious to see it because I think it's really weird.
It doesn't sound that way from the title, you know, Abraham Lincoln, vampire killer.
It's probably true.
You think there's some truth to it?
Probably.
Are you into that whole vampire thing? Or are you a vampire lover person?
No, they scare me. Nope. Don't.
You know they don't exist.
Oh.
You feel better now?
I do. I feel much safer. Thank you.
Okay. All right. But are you into any sort of the genre? I mean, you know.
I did see Twilight and stuff, but my friend kind of forced me to. But once you get hooked, you get hooked. Yeah. But I don't know.
It's all about that guy who takes his shirt off all the time, right?
Yeah, and also True Blood. Okay, so I'm kind of into the vampire thing.
Not so much zombies, more vampire?
No, zombies definitely scare me. Those ones definitely do.
They're also not real.
I don't know.
You're more attracted to like a vampire than a zombie.
I'd probably date a vampire over a zombie, yes.
Is this who you're dating now?
Oh, my God. This is my brother.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Mistake to make. Everybody makes that mistake.
Yeah, everybody frequently thinks that we're dating, but that's not true because he's my brother.
It's just not practical. You know too much about each other, for one thing. Thank you very much. Thank you. What? What'd you say? It's time to play the quiz?
Oh, did I say that? It's time to play the quiz.
You're not even paying any attention at all, Mike. If you're going to be our announcer, you got
to... I was nodding off there for... No, yeah, I'm just kidding. I'm joking. No, it probably is time to play the quiz. That's a good idea.
Well, what time is it? I don't know. You should
it's
be watching.
It's time to play the quiz.
Oh, it is. It is time to play. Okay, come on in. Plenty of room, plenty of seats, immediate seating. Come on in. We're going to play the What Do You Know quiz, a chance to win fabulous prizes simply for being fabulous. Before we can do that, we have to have... who do I give that? The sheriff has got... Okay, a sheriff. Come on over here. Tim, Sheriff, he has the four disclaimers. He can tell you if you can or cannot play the quiz. It's very important.
All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Who life coaches the life coach? Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. All opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
We'll get it. We're very close, friend. Thanks, sir. Thanks, Tim. I owe you a lot. No, keep that. That's a little souvenir. It's the least we can do. That's not a bribe. Let's see the hands of those of you who want to show them, indicating interest in playing the quiz. A chance for you to... Your hand was up. Are you taking it back? You what? You want him to do it? Well, you'd have to ask him about that, dear. I don't really care. I think he wants you to do it. You want her to do it, don't you? Oh, he wants to do it. Or you want her to do it? You want to do it? Well, come down this way. It's shorter. Okay, that's cool. I'll be back. Okay. All right, there. She wants you to do this. Why is that?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Do you even know who she is?
I'm vaguely familiar with her, all right.
And you are?
Tony McCarthy.
Tony, and are you from around here, Tony?
Well, I live in Green Bay now.
You live in Green Bay? But where'd you come from originally?
I came from Ireland originally.
Ireland? That's near Green Bay, isn't it?
Pretty close, yeah. Longitudinally.
Yeah. Okay. Tony, one good reason you should play this quiz.
Can't think of a good one, but I'll give you a bad one. I play trivia all the time.
He's a trivial guy. He's a trivialist. Come on, Tony. Come on, Tony. Come on, Tony. All the way from Green Bay, Ireland. I have a seat up here, if you would. Right there. Makes up at home. That water is for you. All right there. Nice piano work. All right, Tony. So what do you do these days as far as a work or play or vocation?
I'm a food scientist.
A food scientist?
Yeah.
So do you actually invent food or?
Sort of. No, yeah. Just trying to make it healthier and...
What food have you made healthier recently?
Cheese.
Healthy cheese. You know, Tony, no one's going to eat it if it's healthy for you.
I know.
You immediately see it plummet.
Fatally flawed.
Yeah. How do you make cheese healthy? You don't eat it, right?
No, you don't. Take the fat down.
Take the fat down? But that's the flavor, Tony.
You don't need quite so much of it, though.
So much flavor?
No, it still tastes just as good, even better.
It does, huh? But what do you have in place of fat, then?
Or is maybe that a little bit of lactose.
Proprietary.
Maybe a little bit of water, that kind of thing.
Lactose and water. Boy, that sounds good to me. Boy.
No sugar.
The lactose water and other things you can't mention because you're,
okay, proprietary.
Proprietary and so forth. Have you always been a food scientist?
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Where were you trained as a food scientist?
In Cork, in University College Cork.
Yeah. Well, is Irish food science a little different from American food science?
You know, it's a big dairy country as well, so it's very similar to Wisconsin.
Similar. Do you know anything about the bubbles in Guinness?
Yeah. Yep. Nitrogen as opposed to CO2. Yeah. Gives it a nice, dense, tight
So that's
form.
Why there's so many of them and they're so small?
Exactly.
And they keep coming at you?
Well, that's if you keep drinking them, you know.
Yeah. I mean, well, let me ask you this.
Got to get out of the way.
Is it actually a meal in a glass? I've been told this, and I believe it.
Well, yeah, we've been told that, too. It's all brainwashing, you know. Guinness is good for you, you know, but...
It's good for you.
In small doses.
So, small doses. Small doses. Irish it's, small doses, I can deal with that.
It's really good for you in large doses, though.
How long have you been over on this side?
Well, this is my second tour.
Second tour.
I've lived here for about 15 years before, and I've been here about 2 years.
Yeah. Do you work out of a company from over there and over here?
Well, I kind of traveled around, you know, with the food science business. It's pretty global, so, you know, I was in Ireland and in Mexico for a few years.
So are you just like a food scientist gunslinger?
Pretty much, yeah.
You're a hired gun?
That's what I am.
Yeah. You're a hired gun? You've been to Green Bay? Where else have they...
Have food will travel. Yeah.
Yeah. Where else have you slung?
Well... Different places.
Yeah.
I worked in Saudi Arabia. Like I said, I worked in Mexico for about 6 years. And,
yeah. Food science in Saudi Arabia, a little different again.
It's difficult getting those cows to produce milk in that heat, but
Do they have dairy herds in Saudi Arabia?
They do, yeah.
They do, but they're indoors, I suppose.
No, actually, outdoors. They've got shade and they've got water sprays, and they don't have the humidity like we have here. And actually, it's quite good.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
John, did you have a question?
What? Well, I had a question. Yes. Do you want to know if somebody else wants to play the quiz?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just very interested in this Phillips Food Science. Yeah, how do they do that?
Well, you know, if they want to play the quiz, all they have to do is pick up a phone and dial 800-940. Well, you mentioned the time earlier.
I'm talking to him, not you.
Sorry about that.
800. You're the announcer. You don't need
800-942-5669. That's 1-800-WA-NO or 1-800-WACK-NOW, and answer this qualifying question.
Okay. I guess I got to do this then. I'll be right back to you. Good things here. Hemingway. The squirrel-tailed dinosaur discovered in Bavaria pretty much proves something about dinosaurs that people thought may have been true, but this confirms it apparently because it's the oldest dinosaur thing they found so far. Not a thing. It's a fossil. But the discovery actually proves something that pretty much confirms the fact about dinosaurs that was thought to be true, and now they pretty much think is true. And what is that thought, then, about dinosaurs things, is the question. Oh, and the phone's already there. Good, good. They've been online the whole time, anyhow. So Kathy's online from Phoenix. Hey, Kathy.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good. Temperature in Phoenix right now?
Temperature in Phoenix, well, it's probably, oh, gosh, it's 94, and it'll probably get up to at least 104.
Eh, that's typical. We get that all the time, Kathy. We had 104 yesterday, or the other day.
Well, it's probably going to get hotter than that during the week, up to maybe 110 to 113.
Okay, but you claim you have dry heat. Is that what I hear?
Right now we're in monsoon season, and monsoon season coincides with the hurricane season.
Yeah.
And so we can actually have pretty high humidity.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this now, the question here. This squirrel-tailed dinosaur, does it more or less prove that dinosaurs had feathers?
well, they've always thought that dinosaurs were related to birds, so that would make sense. That would make sense.
Yes, that's right. Wow, you hit that right on the head, Kathy McCann from Phoenix. All right. Kathy, are you comfortable here? You got a...
Yes, I'm really excited.
Oh, you're very good. Kathy, this is Tony. He's a food scientist.
Hi, Kathy.
Hey, Tony.
He may have scientized some of your food that you've eaten, actually, so that's pretty interesting.
Well, I think that would be great. And guess what, Tony? I'm Irish, too, so I think this is going to be great.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, this means something to somebody somewhere, then. That's very important. Two of you work as a team, Kathy and Tony. We have various categories, don't we, Mike Arnold?
We do indeed. The categories are people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, current events, science, and odds and ends.
Okay, Kathy, you pick the first one. What would you like?
Current events.
Current events, right out of the news. Okay, so what's new in particle physics?
Oh.
Talk over now, both of you.
Yeah, that'd be the God particle.
They discovered a new particle.
Yeah, the Higgs boson, yeah.
He's saying it's the God particle.
Yep.
Is that what you heard?
Yeah.
Kathy? Yeah? Okay, yeah, yes. Okay, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Cool.
I hadn't heard it, but
so that would be one right and zero wrong.
Okay.
And the remaining categories are people, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Very good. Donnie, what would you like?
Well, let's pick something I know nothing about. Science.
Science. Food science, other science might be outside your genre. Which of the following is actually hardwired in the brain? Is it coveting, honoring parenting, or adulterying? These are the things from the Ten Commandments. One of them is actually...
Are we talking a human brain?
Yes, I'm talking the human
brain. The monkey brain.
Thank you for mentioning that. I was. Which of the following is hardwired in a human brain? Coveting, we covet by hardwiring, honoring our parenting, or adulterying. Is that wired in there?
I guess coveting.
What do you think, Tony?
I'm guessing coveting, because wanting what other people have got.
Yeah, that's hardwired, you think? Yeah.
I'll be my guess. What do you think, Kathy?
He's a food scientist.
Well, which one of those would have a survival advantage? Coveting?
How about he's right? Didn't we just say that? Yes? Okay, he's right. Okay, all right. All right.
That's two right and zero wrong. Oh, okay. No wrong.
All right. What's left
no,
there?
No wrong. Mike. And what's left is people, places, things you should have learned in school, or odds and ends.
Odds and ends. Back to Kathy.
Things I should have learned in school.
Had been paying attention. Youngsters sniffing the armpit pads of the elderly. In a recent study. I don't know why this is in here, but I had put it somewhere. Do they, A, get unbelievably grossed out? B, could tell they were old people? Or C, said earthy or stale water smell? These are youngsters sniffing the armpit pads of the elderly. Probably happens in food science.
All the time.
They can tell they were old people.
Okay.
I'm going to go with you on this one, Kathy.
Yes, they can tell they're old people pretty easily. Well, there you go. Don't keep your armpit pads lying around. They've won the quiz, Mike.
They have won the quiz. Yeah.
They could quit here, or they could go for a one-fer, it seems to me, at this point.
Right, or they could go for the mother load for just one more, right?
One more. We're yeah, short on time. Is that okay with you?
I don't know.
Excellent. What's left there? You guys want to go on?
You choose, Kathy. I don't know.
People, places.
What's left?
People, places.
Well, no, you've won the quiz. You could quit here, but you could go for the mother load just by answering one more question right. You get it wrong, of course, you lose everything.
Well, what do you think, Tony? Are you a gambling man?
Yes, I guess I am. Okay.
Who knew?
Okay. Come on.
People, places, or odds and ends?
People, places, odds and ends. Is it your turn to choose, Tony? I believe it is.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, this is for everything, all the marbles.
We'll try them. Was it people, places?
People, places. They're two different things.
Oh, well, places, then.
Places, then? Okay. The Great Wall of China, longer or shorter than originally thought. They finally measured it after all these years, thinking, boy, this is a great wall.
But
Did it turn out to be longer or shorter than they originally thought by measuring it accurately for the first time?
The Great Wall of China.
Yeah, longer or shorter.
Need an answer, longer, folks. Longer or shorter.
We're running out of time here.
I'm going to guess longer.
Longer? Tony says longer, and he's a food scientist.
So I'm obviously wrong.
Okay. You think so, Tony?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
He thinks so, yes. What do you think, Kathy?
Whatever Tony thinks.
For everything. This is for everything. No pressure.
I'm getting nods here.
Yes? Say yes?
Yes.
Yes, it is, yes. Longer, much longer. Over 9,000 miles long compared to, kilometers.
Wow.
Yes. Much longer. They had no idea. Go ahead.
And Tony, here's what you won. When you need to answer questions about the past, present, or future, about relationships, or just about any situation, you can turn to the Zombie Tarot, an oracle of the undead with deck and instructions written by Stacey Graham and illustrated by Keppel and Garoni, and then learn about the Dairy State reading Mary Erpenbach and Maggie Ginsburg Schultz's Wisconsin, a tradition of innovation. Kathy, you've won a bag of Steep and Brew breakfast blend designed to be lively and satisfying for that first wake-up cup, as well as some sweet, smooth Costa Rican terrazzo from Madison's Steep and Brew Coffee. We know beans about coffee. Then get on down with the funk masters Clyde Stubblefield and John Jabbo Starks on the CD Come and Get Some of This from WJCT Jacksonville. Celebrate more than a year of royal wedded bliss with a book of William and Kate Paper Dolls from Tom Tierney. And the What Do You Know party game is also your prize. You're listening to What Do You Know?
Michael Feldman, producer, international.
They all get
it's
that.
It's the big deal.
It's the big deal. This is PRI, Public Radio International.
Okay. And, you know, each week at this time, we're going to get actual memos sent in by actual listeners so that actual listeners shall not perish from the earth. And here's what we got one here. Now, this is, I don't know if this is true just of Baltimore, but I'm sure in a lot of places this has happened. It's regarding car windshield messages that a neighbor might leave on your car windshield. Now, does this happen to some of you? Yeah, I've left a couple, I must admit, in my day, but I don't know. But anyhow, this is in Baltimore, and I'll tell you, someone sent out a memo then to all his neighbors about the occurrence and some guidelines he'd like to see. It reads as follows. Neighbors, in the interest of getting what you want when you leave a note on someone's car windshield, one, there may be unusual reasons or extenuating circumstances for people to have done whatever they did to deserve your note. Particularly in the current excess heat. Lack of electricity, trees down, constant construction on the street. Please always give people the benefit of a doubt. Two, if you're unwilling to sign your note, I assume out of fear of retaliation, maybe you shouldn't be phrasing it how you are phrasing it. Put it down for a few minutes, come back, and consider a way to rewrite it in such a way that you'd be willing to sign it.
signing it and leaving a phone number opens the lines of communication so you can actually solve the issue. 3, also by not signing your note, you are making everyone on the block a part of your personal issue. Please ask them first if that is okay. 4, threatening people or their possessions, no matter how small, especially anonymously, escalates the situation. You are bullying people to get what you want instead of negotiating with them. Bullying is not a way to improve our sense of community. Our desire to look out for one another or to give this neighborhood the quality reputation that keeps it healthy and growing. 5, threatening people and then adding a smiley face at the end does not make it less threatening, cute, or in any way okay. It makes it creepy. Please, let's all keep our cool. Thank you very much for that memo, and it's something to keep in mind if you're leaving notes under windshields. Good advice, I would say. And wait, where can they send those memos, Mike Arnold?
Well, they can send those memos to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org, the subject line memos, or go to notmuch.com and post it there.
Thank you. How many of you have ever been poetry slammed? Yeah. Well, applaud if you've been slammed. Okay. You know, in my day, poetry, poets and so forth didn't slam one another. I can't imagine Emily Dickinson really at a slam, but it's possible. But this is a whole new genre here, and it's and we actually have the national Madison's National Poetry Slam team, or two members of it anyhow, and this is like a national competition, right, that you go into, and actually let me just talk to them for a minute over here so we get to set this up here. We've got David Hart, Caitlin McGahan, is that right? Yes, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks.
See you.
Well, thank you.
You're well, and she's good. Okay, that's good. What for people who are unfamiliar with slamming altogether, what sort of competition is it? I mean, what is involved in a slam, poetry slam?
It is the competitive art of poetry, and really slam poetry was started to make poetry accessible to everyone. Started in a bar in Chicago. It blends performance with writing, and really that's what it is. We take 5 judges from the audience, and it's sort of an Olympic-styled judging after a lot of drinking. But it's...
Does that at all affect the judging, the amount of drinking? Then?
It actually makes the poetry better. So I hear.
How did you start with it?
Well, my day job is an assistant attorney general, but I've always been a... that's enough to make you do poetry. I get it.
You find yourself doing poetry during the course of your job.
It's easier to do poetry than to write legal briefs sometimes. But I started out as a hip hop artist, and when I was 14, 15, and it got harder to explain to the family why I needed to leave for hip hop, and it's easier to say that I'm leaving for poetry.
Caitlin, pretty much same story for you?
Yeah, same story.
Just Attorney General and all the rest?
Right, yes, it's a tough...
Pop.
Right, yes. But no, I've been writing for a long time and was invited to share it on stage, and it's just been a really fun element to add to it, the performance piece.
Is there any... Like, I know people I know who do write poetry or write verse, I guess you could say. It's like a private thing. So this is kind of like a major breakthrough where you're actually out there shouting it, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of guts to hop up on stage and share what, you know, I've kept in my journals for so long. So, I mean, it's fun. We have a great crowd, and everybody's really welcoming and supportive. So, but it's a lot of fun.
Excellent. Now, we can get an example or one or two examples here. And what is the procedure now that you're going to show us? I mean, how does this contest work?
The contest works that there are 2 rounds a night for slam. Again, we get 5 judges from the audience, and they judge a 3-minute original poetry of original construction, 0 to 10 based on the content of the poem as well as the performance. And tonight is a piece, this evening or afternoon is a piece from Caitlin and myself.
Okay, all right. So who begins and how does that?
Caitlin.
You take the mic and do your magic.
Valentine's Day.
did not begin with love or chocolate or Cupid or cards. It began with martyrs. No sappy sweet commercials, no icing or rocks adorn their hands, no societal pressures to be happy, sexy, conjuring a modern-day Aphrodite to provide the best Valentine's Day ever with the most perfect gift, outfit, or man. And if you didn't have those things, no maid of soul or one from the corner bar, then you're fated to be unseen. It's all or nothing this nowadays Valentine's scene, but it began with martyrs. And you know a little bit about that. Maybe not the lions in the Colosseum because you survived, but you know what it's like to be eviscerated, what it's like to be fed your own heart, to have a crushed spine. You know a little about sacrifice. For more than a decade plus longer, you've strapped on the armor like Joan of Arc. You charge to the front lines, but you don't hear angels. You hear ghosts and fire, and you're burning, burning, burning up inside. While others fret to find the most perfect gift, you're worried about that door, that gateway that allows your waking hell to be served up on a plate of roses, the thorns cut so deep they make your tears fall back into yourself as you drown your lungs in salt and rage, another year notched on his belt. Like wild turkey, you take the quick shots of people's compliments with an internal wince and that slow burn, and you feel like a chicken. Not like one that's waiting across the road. I'm talking yellow belly chicken that slinks around because they don't think they have the right to stand up. I'm talking gutless, no nothing. No wonder you only ever got flowers from him only one other time. And you questioned if you're worthy of such kindness, decided you weren't, so the flowers made you want to throw up because prior to that, only he gave you flowers to remind you that you were nothing. Cold, dead inside. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust every year. He places flowers on the headstone of your childhood. Every year, he tries to tell you that you're nothing, that you don't exist. But you know you're better than that. Like Mother Teresa, you bathe your wounds and give strength to your soul. You will never give up. You will keep fighting, and you'll end up wearing that lion for a cloak, just like Hercules did.
This is a piece that I wrote as I was trying to understand our current governor's position. And I'm not trying to be funny. I had to visualize what, or just meditate on what he must have been thinking about the people here in Madison as he came in to make his changes. And so this is it. And so they tell me that this is what democracy looks like. One pathetic, rusty mic, a broken down amp, and two dingy speakers. Donated by some college cover band who still rehearses in their mother's basement while a few thousand dirty, misguided hippies dance barefoot around a drum circle, channeling the 40s or the 60s or whenever the heck they thought they were cool and relevant, calling for the replacement of the only sane thing left in this godforsaken city. You know, I actually used to pity people like you. People who use democracy like it's the punchline of some unfunny joke you tell at your cocktail parties or your hip rallies or carelessly. The way you casually compare anyone who doesn't agree with your politics to Hitler or some other fascist dictator. You know, democracy used to mean something greater than this. And it was a higher calling, and I hold out hope that we can pull democracy from your death grip. I honestly do, but as I stand here, staring out my window, watching you behave like children in and on this hallowed space, it makes me reminisce for a time in our country where democracy actually denoted selflessness and self-sacrifice. Where the price of democracy wasn't just a few dollars taken from your already bloated paycheck, you could just file a grievance with your union boss over it. It meant freedom or death. It meant hunkering down in fields of the new country ripe with pneumonia and frostbite and fighting until your last breath. And then fighting on just a little bit longer until there were no more tears or blood to shed, no more rallies to have, and no more slogans or songs to write. It meant having to fight guerrilla style, outnumbered, outgunned, outmanned, but never outclassed against the forces of British colonialism and tyranny. See, when I was young, my mother explained to me, that democracy, true American democracy, was created by a few good men, God-fearing men, who sat in the back of clandestine Boston taverns, rolling out the Magna Carta like it was bread dough, and baking them and cutting them into unequal and even uneven pieces, and baking them and packaging them into parcels to give to Paul Revere, who would risk his life riding them at night by horse straight to Ronald Reagan, who would in turn shake my hand and entrust those very same packages of democracy both to Jesus and me. And so you see, I really am on a mission from God. And I don't mean mission from God like I'm the Blues Brothers, or mission from God because I'm the son of a Baptist preacher, but I mean mission from God like I'm the Apostle Paul, falling off his horse, riding on the way to Damascus mission. See, I'm the only one who's brave enough and courageous enough to do what must be done. That's to save the world and to protect the world from you. So you can just pull out your incense and your hemp. You can sing Kumbaya all you want with Lady Forward. You can take shots at me. You can call me a criminal all you want. You can take shots at my family. But you can't tell me that this is what democracy looks like.
All right, so we got the personal and the political here. Pretty good. And is that pretty much the way it breaks down in terms of an actual slant?
Absolutely. Yeah. Anything from Star Trek movies and physics to very personal to funny to spiritual and political, it follows a very long continuum in line. Absolutely.
Now, and for example, if you when you get up and do this, is there improvisation? And like, if someone following you thought what you said was, let's say, a crock,
sure,
and they wanted to respond to it in terms of what you were saying about maybe something that they were or they believed in, could they come up and improvise a response? Is that how it works in terms of a?
Sure, sure. That whole piece was improvisation. I was responding to her. Yeah, sure. They're
it's all about Valentine's Day. Boy, did I get that wrong.
Of course. There are some very talented poets on the national scene who make it their business to be responsive to pieces that they hear in a national slam. Yeah,
but is that how it generally works? Or you do prepared pieces as opposed to improvisation?
Almost always prepared pieces, but in your sort of toolbox of pieces as a team, if you hear a piece and you hear that the crowd has reacted favorably or not favorably, you send up your person to do this piece or that piece or a team piece or whatever.
Excellent.
Sure.
Excellent. Yeah. Do we have time? You want to do another little piece, each of you?
I have no problem doing another piece. We brought an actual team member. I'm an organizer this year. We could certainly do another piece.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that we get our website out. Sure. Yeah. Shameless plugging. www.urbanspokenword.org. Mm-hmm. And we meet every third Saturday of the month at Jenna's Lounge right now.
Yeah.
And we're sending the team away in August. But we're having a fundraiser for them on the 14th at, what is it called, Washington Square Hotel.
Yeah.
Cafe?
Okay.
Sure.
Lakeside Vibers.
Sure.
Okay. Did you want someone on the team to do it, or are you?
Yes.
Yes? Yes. Come on. Who do we have here?
Tony Fudge.
Come on up, Tony. See if you got a response to what David told. Maybe he was in that crowd. You're talking.
That's right. He'll be Newt Gingrich or something.
How you doing?
Good.
Okay. Floor is yours.
Floor is mine? Okay. It's a very long, strong apple that I use when I have an itch.
Too many times do I puff out my bicycle and squeeze my fire hydrant. As I watch you try to hold your salmon, when you release, it's like an explosion of confetti. I've never experienced anything as majestic as your amazing silverware. The heavens and the earth conspired when they made your vinegar. Even though you somersault, I still believe in the power of toothpicks. Because there's a fire that lingers inside my bongo that makes my powder pity-pat. So never crease my Applejacks unless you want your hedgehog hacksawed. Because I would pack a pistol for any Peter Pipers that get a hankering for pickled peppers. In other words, I'd wield a weed whacker for any dangling dandelions dancing around your Dippin' Dots. Because you are not only my longitude, my latitude, my lilacs, my lily pads, but you're my lunch meat. Thank you.
Yes! Thank you, guys. From the Madison National Poetry Slam Team. Thank you. Tony, Caitlin. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. Okay, so you've been slammed, ladies and gentlemen. And thanks for putting it all in perspective there. It's about the toothpicks, if you ask me. So that's Poetry Slam. And tonight it's at, is it at Janice tonight, or where is it? Do you know what it is tonight? Where you guys are tonight? Through Saturday. Okay. 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 All right, sounds good. Thank you very much for that. A little poetry there. What was that? The bar is in Chicago, right? That has
the Green Mill.
The Green Mill, that's what it was.
Mark, yeah. Can't remember the guy's name.
Smith. Yeah.
Mark Smith, yeah.
Yeah, at the Green Mill. That's where it all started, I guess.
Yeah, like back, I don't know, 89, 90, something.
Yeah,
like
it's been going on for a while, I know. Well, that's really cool. Let's see. Kelsey Balk. Will men ever be comfortable on the playground? Some of them are a little too comfortable on the playground, is what I'm afraid. What, Kelsey? What? Okay, okay. Comfortable on the playground. I mean, like taking your kids to the playground? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, there's a little bit more behind the question than originally when you think, but it's a shorter way of phrasing it. Okay. I think that a lot of more women are becoming the breadwinners in the family. And I think that there's still a stigma for men that they need to be the breadwinner. So I was curious if you thought that men will ever feel comfortable with that.
You mean on the playground?
Right. Will they be comfortable to be the ones taking the kids to the playground, taking the kids to daycare?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I was so comfortable on the playground. But it was with the mommy's groups I wasn't too comfortable. because you have these groups where all the mommies get together with their kids. And when a guy walks in there, they all suddenly shut up, you know, and then they...
Well, they're talking about lactation or something.
Yeah, all right. they were in the middle of showing stretch marks and stuff. And I mean, I got stretch marks. I'd be happy to share, you know, but... That's no, okay. I don't really feel it. I don't know. My experience, it was great. I loved doing that stuff.
Good.
It's when they get to be teenagers I get uncomfortable. Then you're sort of out of the picture, but yeah. Okay. All right, so are you in that situation yourself?
No.
You foresee that happening?
Possibly.
Okay. Well, think about it. You know, I'll think about it there. Playground duty, no, that was cool. Except I kept hitting my head on the slide thing. That was on our park. And, you know, when she was real little, I had to take her up the stairs or the slide and stuff, and there was a little overhang, and I always banged my head on it as I was putting her down the slide. And I actually could have died after, if she'd stayed that age for much longer. Why did you not say anything about the dress code for this show? John Grindy, Grindy, Realtor, Grindy, Mr. Grindy, stand up, Mr. Grindy. You are not dressed properly, sir.
Well, never.
Dress shirt. Well, a show like this.
Well, I was raised. I never gave a thought to the fact that it was a radio show, yeah. And people aren't going to see you anyway. But in preparation for coming, I thought. I asked someone who had been at one of your shows before, what's the dress code for this thing? Yeah. And she looked at me and said, this is radio, John.
Yeah, and you need a pocket protector, mister, if you're going to stick these pens and things in your shirt pocket. They leak.
Yeah, I know. I've ruined some shirts because of that. But
Do you feel underdressed, overdressed?
I feel overdressed. Yeah, I do.
Want to take something off? Go ahead. We're we're very casual around here. Oh, my God, he's doing it. Okay. No, Grandy, sit down, will you please? You're getting out of hand. Nice to meet you, though. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see you. Yeah, thank you. Elizabeth Rammel? Elmhurst? Rammel, okay. You would know, I guess. First time for me. I know you're famous from this radio show, so do you know Justin Bieber? If you do, then can I meet him? Oh, the Biebs? Yeah, stand up, dear. That's a... You want to know the Biebs?
I do.
I could hook you up real easy.
Really easy?
Yeah.
Okay, do you have his number?
No, but I have the sheriff. I have a... Would you like to meet Tim Rodenberg, the sheriff of Claremont County? I can.
Well, he's sitting right here. I can easily meet
him. Yeah, no, I know. That's easier, a little easier than the Biebs. I'll have to make a few calls.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, okay.
Or a concert ticket. Chicago concert ticket?
No, I can't get you a ticket. Are you kidding? Are you crazy?
It's only a few thousand.
Speeding ticket, yeah. We get your speeding ticket in Claremont County.
I don't have my license.
I mean, that'd be a big deal for you if you met the Biebs, right?
Very big deal.
Okay, well, I'll put that past him. Yeah, no, we're Facebook friends. Oh, yeah, we all know each other, us celebrities, though. Pretty amazing, that. Then, of course, there's Mike Rammel. You must know him. Is it Rammel or Rammel?
Rammel.
I got it right. Stand up here, Mike. And he's a mailman. Let me shake your hand. Mailmen are my favorite people.
Thank you.
You know, rain or shine or sleet. The audience is over there if you want to see them. There you go. There, that's Mike. And you're out there. You're out there. Are you a rural route carrier or city? Or?
City carrier.
City carrier, yeah.
Out there in the elements.
Yeah, out there in the elements in Elmhurst.
Right.
The Elmhurst Mints.
Right.
Yeah. You got a day off, huh?
I'm on vacation.
You are? Yeah. So what's a mailman's holiday like? You go walking around various places? Just go on various porches for no reason?
Stay home and try to be cool.
Yeah. This is part of the tour, I imagine.
Right. We're going. We're on vacation going to northern Wisconsin.
You are?
Going fishing.
You may go stop before fishing. You got your bait and everything?
We got our poles.
What are you going to use for bait up there?
Suckers.
Well, there's one born every minute. That's the beauty of it. So it's easy to get bait, you know.
Right.
What are you fishing for and where are you
muskies.
Going? Muskies. And where are you going?
Mercer, Wisconsin.
Mercer. You got muskies up there?
Yes, sir.
In town or you got to go on the lake? Again?
No, on the lake.
Yeah. Probably some guys got them in their freezer, probably. You just save yourself a lot of trouble, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Great. Thanks to see you. Oh, I see. Oh, your garage. Oh, here's what we got. My garage collapsed. How do I get my bike out of the garage to get to work? You ride a bike to work?
Right. Yeah. I live close to the post office.
And how did your garage happen to collapse?
We had a storm last Sunday, and four trees fell on our garage and totally wiped it out.
Oh, my God. Terrible.
Yeah. So that's why we left home, just to get out of there.
Yeah. It's so lucky you don't keep... Lucky you don't keep the car in the garage, though.
It was close. The storm came. We had it outside, but everything. All the garage sale stuff is inside the garage right now.
Yeah. You know, because a guy's reaction would be, if a storm's coming, pull the car in the garage. You know, that's absolutely the wrong. It's counterintuitive to pull your car out of the garage.
Right.
Good, but you lost the bike, huh? In there, you know?
Well, it's in that we can't, the doors, everything's jammed. You can't get nothing in the garage. You can't open the garage door.
Have you tried going through the window?
Yeah, but we can't get the bike out the window, though.
No. Pieces you could. Right. The way it is now, you're probably.
Right.
All right, well, I hope you get to take care of it. Have a great vacation.
Thank you.
Yeah, very nice to meet you. Thank you for delivering our mail. How are we doing time-wise there, right?
Might be good to start the quiz sometime.
You're thinking that?
Maybe.
What time is it?
Well, it's 11:33.
Yeah.
Huh? You can go longer.
You got some time.
I got some time. Okay, thank you.
I'm just trying to be more
vigilant. He's
new
here, you know.
He doesn't know. Yeah.
Never heard the show before coming here. Have you ever realized the relationship between dwarves and eagles? Peter Waxberger of Boone, Iowa. Hey, Peter. Oh, how are you?
All right.
I've never heard of any such thing. Can you explain to me what you mean?
Well, it's actually a trick I used to get your attention to draw attention to a Wisconsin treasure that a lot of people might not be aware of. That's Eagles for Kids. It's an eagle cam similar to what some people may have seen in Decorah, but it's run by third and fourth graders at Blair Taylor Elementary School.
Yeah.
And
Where is Blair Taylor Elementary School?
In Blair.
Or Taylor. One of the two, I knew that.
Well, Blair, Wisconsin is in the western part of the state. And
can we see this cam online? We go online?
Yes. There's Eagles for Kids, the number four, not the word four, on the Ustream that most people are familiar with, and they also have their own website, eaglesforkids.com, and you can pick the stream up from there.
Well, that's cool. You snagged me on this one, but it was worth it. Thank you. Check out that site. Very nice to meet you. Peter Wachsberger from Boone, Iowa. All right. We have people who are having girl time here. That could be cool. Gail Vanderlyn. And is that the girls there having girl time? Let's go and see what they're doing in a girl time. It's like playtime with the mothers and stuff. You never really know what goes on during girl time. I keep meaning to take some good girl time. You ever done girl time?
Oh, I wish I have.
Yeah. Okay. Because I guess, I don't know if there's, are there boys involved in girl time ever? No? No boys?
Not allowed. No. That's the reason for girl time.
Is to get away from boys?
To not have boys.
Yeah.
Around. Ever.
Well, for
a while.
You seem pretty vehement about this. I'm not going to press you on it.
Yes.
No boys ever for a while?
For a while. Yeah, for a few days.
A few days? Without any males of any sort?
Right. Yes, of any sort.
Not even like dancers or, you know.
I don't think we're even interested in that.
No. Well, who would be, really? I mean, not me so much, you know. This would not interest anybody.
That's why I said that, yeah. Kinda...
But, you know, a good male dancer, it might be, you know, spark up girl time, don't you think?
No.
Well, how do you feel about that? You want to weigh in on it?
I'm not with this group.
But certainly you've had girl time.
Yes, I have.
Girl time, much like their girl time, without any males at all?
No, I like the males.
Males and girl time. Oh, okay, but all right, so then what sort of events then go on? How long is it, all weekend girl time?
It's an all weekend girl time, yes. We finished off a couple of pitchers of beer and walked in the heat and shopped and laughed a lot.
Yeah,
lots of laughing.
Mostly about men things?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. That's the only time you can laugh about men is when they're not around.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they just don't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, they wonder why you're laughing hysterically. And nothing is funny, right?
Yeah.
We know something is funny.
We know something's funny.
Yeah, we
yes.
know it too, actually. Did you anything you want to add?
She said it all.
Yeah. So girl time, and then what's the next big event for your girl time?
We got to do ice cream, right? That was on the list. We had the beer. We got to do the ice cream. And then we'll probably do beer again. And then we'll probably... And then maybe we'll canoe. And then maybe we'll walk. And then we'll probably do beer again.
Oh, okay.
And then...
That sounds a lot like guy time, you know? I mean, it's amazing. You might have more in common than you think.
No, I don't think so. No. They can do beer time, but they don't do the laugh time. They just kind of do the serious, you know, beer time. Nothing else.
Well, you've never really been around guy time, have you? I mean, just
guys. Yeah, I've been in guy time.
Well, yeah, you think you have, but you haven't really. I mean, as long as there's a female observer, we're a little bit different, you know. Guy time, nobody says anything. It's really beautiful. They just drink, and no one says a word.
Right. Guys do beer time, they don't talk, and then they just, you know, scratch themselves and do whatever they're doing, but they don't, you know, they don't like...
Oh, yeah, and girls don't scratch themselves. Yeah.
No personal communication whatsoever. No personal thoughts.
No. It goes beyond mere speech when you're a guy drinking. It is. There's something to it, you know. Well, anyhow, have a great girl time. Sorry if I got in the way at all. Have a lot of fun. We're going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz because some of you said to me not so long ago, hey, how come I've never been on the What Do You Know quiz? And so I don't know who that was, but it might have been just in my dream.
But let's see the hand now of anybody who says, you know, I could have done that. I saw that first quiz there earlier, and I don't see why you... well, no, don't point to other people. That is so wrong. Look at now he's doing it. Yeah, stop pointing to other people. Okay, I think you're the one because you're not pointing to anybody else. Yeah, I guess you stand up here and say hello. You are?
Mary Frances Wilkins.
Mary Frances Wilkins, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Are you from around here? Or?
I'm from the suburbs of Chicago, Plainfield, Illinois.
Plainfield, okay. And Mary Frances, give me one good reason why you, Mary Frances, should play this quiz.
Well, he did it last year, and I want to beat him.
You want to beat him? Okay. I thought you looked familiar. Okay. Come on down here, Mary Frances. Do you prefer the both names, the Mary and the Frances together? Mary Fran. Okay, that's cool. Walk this way if you would. Watch out for the stand here. He reads music. He likes to show off with that stand. Mary Fran, have a seat if you would. I'll change your water.
Thank you.
First. Is it hot down by you too, I suppose, huh?
Yes, pretty hot down there. But yeah. We're staying a long weekend up in Lake Delton. We have a little condo up there, so it's
Oh,
nice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So you're one of those Illinois interlopers.
Exactly.
That we get up here in Wisconsin in your fancy foreign cars.
Yeah, ours, driving is, a, on ours our, is a Toyota. Woo.
Driving, well, it's foreign, and driving on our free and open highway.
Yes, but we pay a lot of tolls to get there. So.
Yeah, yeah. I had to pick my daughter up at O'Hare yesterday, and I pay the tolls on the way down. And you shouldn't have to pay tolls going back to Wisconsin, I think. That, you know, that at the very least, they should, you know, free ride back to Wisconsin. You're leaving for God's sake. Mary Fran, what are you up to these days? What's new?
Well, I'm, let's see, I'm with the American Library Association.
Oh, you are?
My job, yep. And yeah. We.
What do you do for them?
I work in their publishing department for a magazine publisher.
Oh.
Booklist Magazine, which reviews books for libraries to use as kind of an acquisition source, selection tool.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent.
And a big exciting thing was that we just, ALA just launched a new award. Huh. Which is called the Andrew Carnegie Awards for Excellence in Fiction and Nonfiction. It's kind of a big deal. They had a big at our annual conference last week. Uh-huh. Our first ones were given out. And
yeah, who won that?
Anne Enright won in fiction for her book The Forgotten Waltz. And for nonfiction, it was Robert Massey's Catherine the Great, Portrait of a Woman.
So, Catherine the Great.
Yes. Well, she was quite
that,
a woman.
Was that a big book? I bet it was a big book, Catherine.
It was a big book. It was a big book.
Yeah.
And she was kind of a... Party girl, so.
Party girl.
Yeah. A lot
of girl weekends for her.
Oh, yeah.
But there were boys, too, at Catherine the Great, from what I hear. There.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And other forms of entertainment, which we don't have to go into.
Exactly.
Okay, Mary, that's great. So you're not working now. You didn't go up to work, did you?
We're chilling now.
You're chilling?
Yes.
You're chilling, then you're going up to Delton. And.
Yep. Our four boys are up there taking care of themselves right now in the condo. Uh-oh.
Yeah, that doesn't scare you, does it?
Not too much.
No, not at all. How old are they? Are they old enough to
be? My oldest is almost 17, and my youngest is 4 and a half, so.
Yeah, so the 17-year-old is very responsible.
Okay. We'll run with that. Yeah, he is. He's wonderful.
You're a very trusting parent. I love that.
Well, we wanted to come here. Last time we brought our 4-year-old, so I kept chasing him while my husband was sitting up here. So this time we left him home.
Yeah, and what could go wrong on Lake Delton, really?
Oh, no. No.
All under control. Do they know when you're coming back so they can get all the...
All right, get all the...
All the bottles
get
the girls out.
Right? Exactly.
Okay. Mary Fran, someone there plays along with you, and in order to do that, we have to know who, and when and why and answer the question.
That's true.
Don't we, Mike?
If people want to play the quiz, all they have to do is pick up a telephone and dial 1-800-942-5669. That's 1-800-WA-NO.
Did you know there's a camera on your head?
Yeah, I know, but my hair is getting in the way, which is good.
Yeah.
Or 1-800-WHACK-NOW.
That's going to affect the picture.
You can answer a qualifying question. It will. Yeah. It's like a forest.
Qualifying question? Oh, I'm glad you said that. Okay.
Do you have a qualified question, Matt?
I don't know if it's qualified, but I have a qualifying question. It's qualified as a question. Hemingway. This is right up there, isn't it? Hemingway's book should have been A Farewell to Endings because he wrote a huge number of endings for A Farewell to Arms.
And I want to know, this just came out, there's a book coming out that has all different endings in it. Mm. Did you hear about this one?
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I want to know how many endings actually did he write for Farewell to Arms, Hemingway, and within how many endings?
Let's say three.
Whoa.
Oh,
is that too close?
You tough.
10. Okay, 10.
3 or 10 would be fine.
Let's say 10, yeah.
3 or 10 or whatever, or 13 if you want to add them together. How many endings were written actually for Farewell to Arms? Let's see how close we get. Nancy's on the line from Cave Creek, Arizona. A lot of Arizona calls today.
Hey. How are you?
I'm good, Nancy. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm glad that all the Midwesterners are learning how to deal with heat.
No, we're not. We're suffering like, you know, nobody's business.
Come to Arizona.
Yeah, come to Arizona, right,
yeah,
sure. We want to go into even more heat from after as a relief.
Yeah.
Nancy, Hemingway, Farewell to Arms, wrote
He's great. Yeah, I know this one.
You do?
I do.
How many endings?
47, bingo.
How did you know that, Nancy? How did you know that? Did you just know that, or did you look that up right away, or...?
Seriously, I know that. I love Hemingway.
Oh, you do?
And I'm kind of a bookish person.
Oh, you are. Good, because we got the library person.
Yeah.
In a dozen of those endings, by the way, Lieutenant Henry discovers that he's gay.
What?
Yeah, he threw out those endings. Didn't want to do that one. And then one of them, Catherine has the baby, but it's not his. That was...
Gotcha.
In six of the endings, so...
Let me talk it back.
Okay, none of that is true, so don't worry about it. And we, Nancy, Mary Fran.
Hi, Nancy. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Mary Fran. You know what? I love your spirit of competition.
Well, thank you. Yes, well, that goes way back with us.
This is good. Okay.
Oh, you mean with her husband?
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, you got to have something to base the relationship on, I think. Nancy, Mary Fran, you are a team, and you're a well-read team, so that could... Probably won't help you, actually.
Yeah.
You work together as a team, and Mike Arnold, what do we got there?
Well, we have categories, and the categories are people, places, things you should have learned in school, had you been paying attention, current events, science, or odds and ends.
Okay. Nancy, let's start with you. What would you like?
Things you should have learned in school.
All righty. Here's something you should have learned in school, but I don't think I ever did. What is a derecho?
I know that.
I got the best partner ever.
You know, you're too smart, Nancy. Are you sure you got the right show?
Well.
All right, what is a derecho?
I have been sitting on my hands for 15 years, Michael. So.
And how does that feel? How does that make you feel?
It's a little challenging.
Okay. What's a derecho, though, is the question?
A derecho is a meteorological, it's like a windstorm that comes along with a thunderstorm. Okay. And there just was a derecho like a week and a half ago, because I didn't know the word until a week and a half ago.
Yeah. You agree with that, Mary Fran?
I'll go with her on that.
Yeah, it's a rapidly moving thunderstorm band, wind-driven, rapidly moving. Yeah, that's a derecho. And moves to the right, because that's what derecho means.
Right.
Moves to the left, it's an ischiarrita or something. Yeah.
It's one right, no wrong.
That's kind of interesting. Okay.
Yeah, the remaining categories are people, places, current events, science, or odds and ends.
Okay. Mary Fran, what do you have?
I'll go with odds and ends, please.
Odds and ends. All right. How long does your vacation last? You got a week, 2 weeks?
Just till tomorrow.
Oh, that's it.
Going back tomorrow.
It's a quickie.
Yeah.
What is the latest to be deep fried at the county fair? Well, this doesn't give you much to work with. Did you say current events?
Sure.
Is that what you want?
No, I wanted odds and ends.
Oh, odds and ends. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. The name of which American food or entertainment franchise was chosen because it forced people to smile? Is it Fuddruckers, TGIF, or Chuck E. Cheese?
Well, Chuck E. Cheese used to be Showbiz Pizza.
Yeah.
Maybe they changed it for to name it after the mouse. What do you think, Nancy?
Because you say cheese before you
cheese.
Smile.
Right.
You have to smile saying cheese. Is that what you're saying? Okay. Nancy, weigh in on this.
Well.
Fuddruckers, there's no smiling. I'm sorry.
You know what? Chuck E. Cheese, and when you smile, you know, when you say take a picture and you say cheese. So that kind of makes sense.
So you're saying Chuck E. Cheese.
We'll go with Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese?
Yep.
Yes, Chuck E. Cheese. That was the whole basis for the name. You got to smile when you say Chuck E. Cheese. You do. It just makes me smile.
Two right and no wrong. The remaining categories are people, places, current events, and science.
And you know what's brilliant about Chuck E. Cheese? They sell beer to the parents while the kids just go off and do their thing. You're sitting there getting... But to me, that is a brilliant, brilliant move for a franchise. You know, get the parents plastered, and those kids can... Those dumb tickets and those stupid things they win, you know? Who cares? We're plastered. Wonderful thing. Entertainment for the entire family.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. Whose turn is it now? Nancy's?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, want to hear that again?
Want to hear it again?
It was science was in there, right?
Yeah. You want science?
Yeah.
I'll give you.
I am a total nerd. I'm a nerd.
Oh, you're trying to work your way out of that then?
No,
oh no, you're into science. Okay.
Yeah, I'm into science.
Okay. How about worms in space then? How does that rub you?
Worms in space.
Okay.
Is that like pigs in space? I remember that.
No. That right. Doesn't grab me.
Okay, well, yeah. It's too bad. That's what it is. For worms going into space, A, okay, where is this going? B, it is the thrill of a worm time. Or C, makes them actually live longer, if not happier, lives. Worms who have been in space.
I like
say that again. Say that again.
Okay, I'll try. For worms going into space, A, okay, where is this going? B, it is the thrill of a worm time. Or C, makes them live longer, if not happier lives.
You know what? I would say I think it might affect their longevity.
Oh, okay.
I say C also.
You say C also?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's right. It makes them live longer lives. Worms love space. Don't believe me, that's why. Okay, you know, Mike, here we are again now. They've won the quiz, really.
Yeah.
They could quit here, couldn't they?
Or they could go on to win the mother load.
Yeah, how would they do that then?
They would have to get two more right, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that would
be
the way
to... You need to sound a little more authoritative, Mike, if you're going to do this.
If they could get two more right, they could get the mother load.
Yeah.
Two more.
Oh, two more. Yeah.
All right.
All right.
So, you want to go on and get it, or...?
What do you think, Nancy?
You know,
you could cut your losses here.
We're a good partnership.
Yeah, I say we go for it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Another mother load. It's pretty exciting radio, ladies and gentlemen. What categories are left there?
Categories remaining are people, places, and current events.
Okay. So it's over to you, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very
friendly. I'll go with people, please.
People. These are kind of survey results, usually. Yeah. The percentage of female Facebook posters who put up unflattering pictures of lady friends on purpose.
What?
Yeah, the really goofy one with your tongue hanging out kind of pictures. Is it 25%, 33%, or 51% of female Facebook posters put up unflattering pictures of their lady friends on purpose?
Ooh. I don't know. I'm not confident on this. I'd say go with the middle ground just to be safe. What do you think, Nancy?
You got a Facebook?
Yeah, I'm thinking. Well, it seems rather catty. Mm-hmm. So I know it's not the lowest number.
Yeah.
But
no?
It'd be hard to imagine that 51% are so viciously catty.
I don't know. Maybe the lowest number is good because I don't think all women.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
all right.
I'm okay with that.
She's okay with that, though. You really convinced her.
All right. I'll go with A.
So you're saying 25%?
Yes.
These are the ones who admit it anyway. So,
yeah, right.
You know, 25% is right. 25%. Hey. Oh, yeah. Oh, boy, you're creeping up on this one. This is getting close.
Four right, no wrong, one away from the mother load. So
okay.
That's good. And
what's
the remaining categories are places and current events.
All right. Nancy?
Ms. Francis, got any opinion?
Either one, I'd say maybe
current.
Current
let's
events.
Current event.
Let's go current. Okay, let's go current. Mermaids.
Yes, I heard the story this morning.
You got to get your own show, Mary, because you're killing me here. You're killing me.
I'm sorry. It was about people thinking. It was this morning.
Yeah.
It was about this morning's show.
Okay.
So, I guess I should let you finish after.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. It makes it easier and all. What about mermaids, Nancy, is the question.
people were really believing it and saying that they were out looking for mermaids.
Yeah.
And they were saying that they were real.
Oh, so your information is that there are mermaids? In, well, let me read the question.
No. Please repeat the question.
Repeat it? Like you gave me a chance to say it, Nancy. Mermaids, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, are they real or not? They issued a statement on this, on the status of mermaids.
Yeah, they came out and officially said they're a figment of our imagination.
Okay.
I would go with that.
Yeah, not. Okay, you won it all. Yay. All right, you deserve it. You guys earned it. You did better than he did, didn't you? That's the main thing. What'd they win?
Well, Mary Fran, when hot weather, sweaty weather strikes, there's nothing more comfortable than a pair of buck-naked ultra-light boxer briefs with wondrous diamond-knit wicking and an antimicrobial treatment to fight odor from the Duluth Trading Company. And then test your powers of deduction with 5-Minute Mysteries, 11 challenging whodunits, and an autographed copy by Jack from mysteriesonthenet.com. Never lose your place at a bar with a bottle charm. Beer makes me a good dancer from Say Cheese Designs. And play What Do You Know, the party game to laugh and learn the painless way, including contestants, enthusiastic audience, and the all-knowing Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at notmuch.com. And Nancy, you'll be celebrating 25 long years and counting of slide-splitting radio comedy with the rare and worthful pseudo Sterling. What?
Does it say long years?
It says long. Yeah, it does say long years. Sorry about that. Okay, 25 short years. 25 short years and counting of side-splitting radio comedy with a rare and worthful pseudo-Sterling Jubilee Anniversary Quarter featuring the elegantly bewigged profile of George Michael Feldman and the immortal dictum E Pluribus Unum. Then fill the cornucopia with a classic pen from the Joseph Huber Brewing Company, a T-shirt from WVTF Public Radio, a Blue Golds frame from UW Eau Claire, the Alias Man from Walker Books, a tin of indictments from the Unemployed Philosophers Guild, and the CD What Do You Know About Rachmaninoff with Kremlin-approved liner notes by Michael Feldman on Nimbus Records, all stuffed into a handsome tote bag from the Ithaca Festival.
Indictments.
Thank you.
That's what they're called. Indictments. Sorry.
Well, you won all that, whatever it was. Congratulations. Thanks, Mary Fran. You beat your husband. That's the important thing. Nancy, hang on. Make sure you get that. Thanks for playing, dear.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you. Did you have something else you wanted to add to your indictments?
That's embarrassing, Michael.
No, not at all.
Indictments. That would be
not
what they would be
for
called.
Me.
Yeah.
That's the important thing. Well, how about the little number? You want to close us out with a little tune here? What do you guys got? All right. Is that it? Oh.
Still available to see Marcia Ball on What Do You Know here in Madison on July 14th at the Monona Terrace. You can call 608-262-2201 or go to notmuch.com for tickets. What Do You Know travels to Pocatello, Idaho for a live broadcast on Friday, June 27th at Idaho State University's Stevens Performing Arts Center. Tickets are available at isu.edu/tickets or by calling 208-282-3595. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international.
Thanks, Mike Arnold. Thanks, John and Jeff, boys in the band, myself. Talk to you next week. Marcia Ball's going to be here. John, join us.
Public Radio International. Okay.